Hi there, global citizens. Welcome back to the podcast that inspires a borderless mindset around manifesting a new world. I am your host, Florence Adu, coming to you from Accra, having a great time dealing with just the days and nights of Accra. You know, folks, that's how it goes. And I'm excited because I've been mentioning in my podcast the last couple of weeks that I met some very interesting people in South Africa that I wanted to bring on to the program to talk about their global citizenship. And so this is a really interesting story because I actually met this gentleman randomly in New York. So when we reconnected in South Africa, we're like, So I was having dinner with another local citizen, Chinedu Eshiro, and he noticed him, came in, and they had a conversation. They said hi, and it was, you know, mouthful. We actually didn't meet then. But then when we saw each other in Cape Town, we put the dots together and et voila, another global citizen has been delivered to us and I'm thankful. So let me get to his bio. He is an investor and developer of new businesses with 25 years of experience spanning 32 countries in Africa, gained through a number of successful tech startups. He is a leading pioneer of internet in Africa, having worked in multiple countries building internet service providers, those are ISPs for us acronym folks, and ICT businesses. Some of his successful exits include iBurst in South Africa, One2Net in Uganda, Busy Internet in Ghana, and others. He has also founded and ran the Africa ISP Association for 8 years, during which the ISP industry grew by almost 120%. So this man knows what he's doing, where the tech is involved for sure. So we're going to hear a lot about that. He then moved on to leading efforts to build submarine cables on the continent. He subsequently contributed to the building of terrestrial fiber networks in Ghana and Nigeria. And he is also, which is kind of why we're here today, is he's also the co-founder of Angel Fair Africa, now in its 10th year. So they're celebrating their 10th year. And we're going to talk a lot about that today. The Angel Fair Africa brings selected and curated entrepreneurs to pitch to a room of angel investors with the intent of doing deals. So he's all about this deal building. And I miss saying a little bit something, but this is just to let you all know it's a two-part conversation. So today we're focused on Angel Fair Africa because that is where my guest, Eric Othiokwan, welcome to the podcast, is located.
Thank you. We're in Cape Town. You can see the mountain in the back.
Yes.
Top of my hotel, and it's a beautiful afternoon in Cape Town. Thank you for inviting me to your local citizens podcast. What a random and what a great experience to eventually build it up into something like this.
Yeah, I'm excited.
In New York.
Right, exactly. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to save the typical local citizens chat for our part two conversation, and let's focus on Angel Fair Africa. So it's really this really important event that has been going on for 10 years. And so tell us more. Tell us about how it came about, how you became a part of it, and what it was like early days.
Right. Thank you. So in 2013, I got invited to East London in South Africa. There's another province called East London in South Africa, which is east of Cape Town, which is the western province where I am now. It's basically about a 12-hour drive. So I'd gone to this InfoDev World Bank conference on innovation and entrepreneurship in Africa. And at that time, I had started angel investing with my own capital out of my own family office after exiting some of the businesses that I set up. And at this event, you know, we had this entrepreneur saying, hey, you know, we need investment. And I was really impressed sitting in a room with about 30 entrepreneurs who were really, you can see they were hungry, you can see determination, you can see people who wanted to make a change and build a business. So I was convinced that, and this entrepreneur were not only coming from South Africa, there was from Kenya, Ghana, Nigeria, South Africa, Uganda, you know. So I built the conviction that there was a new generation of entrepreneurs who are leveraging digital technology to create the next level of businesses. And so together with Andile Nkaba, who was in private equity investing into Convergence Partner, decided that we should set up Angel Africa List, which is sort of, we took Angel List and put Africa in it. And the idea was that we told these entrepreneurs to put their profiles together, we'll put it online. We invite our friends and then we can invest in them. So we did this experiment, and for 3 months, no deals happened. And then I started talking informally to these investors, friends, and most of them then said, look, you know, Eric, you know, I believe in you. I think what you're doing is great. But I haven't met these entrepreneurs. So, you know, I can't just put money into them. Then it dawned on me that the difference was that I had met these entrepreneurs and built some conviction. Mm-hmm. But the other people that I was trying to bring in to invest with me and the network I want to build hadn't, you know, met these entrepreneurs. So then we came up with the idea of setting up Angel Fair Africa. Like, let's then do a fair and bring the entrepreneurs then to meet the investors. And then we approached one of my friends at that time was Jamie Clyde, who had set up the Slow Lounge in Johannesburg. And he introduced me to Ross Douglas and Kobe, who were the organizers of the Joburg Art Fair. And the Joburg Art Fair was happening 3 months from then in September in Johannesburg. They normally host this in the Sandton Convention Center. So we broached this idea of the art of emerging businesses before the business of art. Mm. And they got it. They got it. They were like, this could be interesting because we have wealthy people who come to the art fair to buy art.
Yeah.
So he said, how about you give them an opportunity to see some of the emerging businesses before they get into the business of art? And, you know, there was a big aha moment. And, you know, so together with Jamie, Ross and Kobe, we founded Angel Fair Africa. We started with the name Angel Fair and then added Africa to it, as I said, because somebody had Angel Fair. But the idea was that we managed to select, I think, that on the first occasion, which was 25th September 2013, we brought about 20 entrepreneurs from different countries, selected through incubators and accelerators and innovation spots, innovation hubs that we knew, prepared them, and then we put them before about 55 to 60 investors at the Sandton Convention Center. And that event resulted in 3 deals on the spot. The Beta Foundation invested in Vuyos, I invested in Teranga Solutions. And so it was clear to me that this formula was the formula for making deals happen. So to kind of summarize it, this event is about deal making where we create both sides of the investor ecosystem and the entrepreneurial system and bring them together. And it's normally a very small, intimate event of not more than 100 people. And this formula has worked because we curate both sides. And so there's some level of trust and camaraderie that happens when we meet. And that's how deals happen. So, and then since, 2013, we've taken it across the continent. 2014, we took it to Nigeria. 2015, we brought it to Ghana. 2016, we took it to Kenya. 2017, we took it to Ivory Coast. 2018, we took it to Tanzania. 2018, we took it to Mozambique. 2019, we took it to Tanzania. 2020, we're going to do Senegal. Then COVID hit, so we did it virtually. Mm-hmm. 2011 and 2012, we had to cancel because on both occasions, we're going to do Uganda. So we're going to Mauritius in 2021. Then they had a hurricane on the island, literally a month to the event, so we couldn't do it. Then we tried to do the Uganda, and then they had a Ebola scare.
Yeah, also, that's right, last year.
To the event.
Yeah.
So come this year, 2023, the first time we're doing it after 2 cancellations. And so brought it back to South Africa, but this time to Cape Town. And we're going to start it, you know, we're going to have it this week in Cape Town, South Africa. And we're looking forward to bringing the investor community and the entrepreneurs down here. Some of them are actually arriving today. Yesterday, some arrived, some are arriving today. And it's the beginning also of a lot of investor events in the next 2 to 3 weeks in Cape Town.
Okay, nice. So we'll talk a little bit more about the program and highlights. But before that, I want to kind of get into, you know, you mentioned curating these 2 groups. And I want to understand the anatomy of an angel investor. What exactly makes someone an angel and why is that a fit for the African market in particular?
Good question. So generally, if you look at business across the world, there's always people that take extreme risk. The first set of those people is the entrepreneurs. So an entrepreneur takes an extreme risk in the sense that they see a problem, they build a view of that problem, and they come up with a solution to that problem. And they believe that they can actualize that vision. So normally it's sort of utopian. It's almost like intangible, right? An entrepreneur tells you some story. You know, I can make this bottle, you know, make it blue and white, but there was no bottle before. And somehow, I can tell you, this was an idea before. There was an entrepreneur, there was a time that this bottle was an entrepreneur's idea. Somebody said, I can make a bottle like this and made a description. And for him or her to actualize that, he has some skills, some experience in understanding manufacturing, in understanding packaging and starting water production. But they need some capital to make that work. So they have to go to a second person who has that capital, and that person believes in that risk, takes also that kind of risk. So buys into that idea that this can be actualized based on a certain set of criteria or principles that they build by themselves. So generally, what we've seen that angel investors are people who have made money also building something. And so when you go to them, they sort of the sense of belonging is that I was there before many years ago. You kind of have a bit of a connection. There was a time that I had an idea to make a sunglasses. And I came up with this design. And then somebody, my uncle or somebody, my friend, or a fool, these are the three categories. We call them family, friends, and fools, right? A fool is somebody who doesn't know me, but maybe a friend from school and took a risk, took a leap of faith and gave me some money to build. So there's normally sort of that sense of connection because of where that investor who is made money is coming from. So the difference is that the investor, the angel investors are normally people who've made some money by also building something before, right? And they are willing to take that risk to back the next person who is building something into the future. So an angel investor fundamentally has probably three things that are critical. The first is that there's somebody who's built something. So they've been entrepreneurs before or they inherited the wealth. If they inherited this, it means somebody in the family built it, right? If it's corporate, it means there's an institution that built the wealth, right? So some form of money, capital is built by them or somebody they associated with or something they did. Or they won the lottery. I mean, it's not easy to win the lottery, right? Not everybody wins that. So because to win the lottery takes some skill.
Yeah.
As you say, the harder you work, the luckier you become. So being lucky has something to do with hard work.
Yeah.
And then the second is that they've accumulated some money, right? Which sometimes can be as little as $500 or 2,000 rand with South Africa or 2,000 Ghana cedis in Ghana, right? Most of the time, people think you need to have so much money. Yes. But an angel investor is primarily somebody who can risk losing that money. This is a third characteristic, very important. That money is money that the person is comfortable losing. That's what makes you an angel investor. So long as you have some capital that you can lose because you are taking a very high risk in that venture, and there's a 90% probability that that company will fail. Because remember, the person is selling you an idea. They still don't have anybody using it and pay for it. They don't have a customer, right? Mm-hmm. So you are taking an extreme risk. I call it, you take a leap of faith, right? So the third thing is that you build conviction, right? So every investor, angel investor, there's some level of conviction that you build in the entrepreneur, not in the business. And this is the fourth important characteristic. That early stage, you are basically taking a risk in the founder. We say in the angel investing lingo, you back the jockey, not the horse. So the horse runs the race. The horse is the business. But the jockey is the one that reads the race. So you are fundamentally taking a risk in the entrepreneur, which is why building conviction in the entrepreneur and what they do is super important. And so because it's the entrepreneur that builds the business. So there is some correlation and causality there in that process of taking a leap of faith, backing that entrepreneur and realizing that business or getting out something that people can use and pay for.
So these angel investors, what kind of work have you put into actually identifying them? Like how do they spring up? Because, you know, that's big work to find these people who are interested.
Right. And actually, the name angel, they use that word because it's almost like the angelic, right?
Yes.
You be somebody there, you know. But fundamentally, they come in three categories. They're family, friends, and fools.
Sure.
And the reason they come in these three categories is that you can see each of them, there's some relationship. And so you hardly, the third category is called fools because sometimes the relationship is not there or it's not that strong. And that's why they say you're a fool. Because you are taking a leap of faith without having a relationship with the person. If you take the first two, family and friends, there's always a relationship. Your family, your uncle, your dad, there's a relationship. So they'll believe in you and take a risk and take a leap of faith. If it's a friend you went to school with, you live in the same neighborhood with, there is a reason to take a risk. But the fool is a third category who necessarily do not have that ability to, you know, has not built that relationship, but you build a conviction and therefore you take that risk. Now, how do we find them. Generally, you know, it's through your network of people that you've worked with. You know, so majority of the people that I mentioned are people that I work with in my ISP world or I happen to know when I was building ISPs and subsea cables that I work with in technology. And this is the third point, is that angel investors normally invest in what they know or what they have experience in, right? Mm-hmm. And so the important point here is that, yes, the capital is important, but their experience and their network is much more superior. Because they can help you identify pitfalls in the industry in which you are or in building business. And so that can be extremely helpful beyond the capital.
Yeah.
And so traditionally, most angel investors invest in an industry they know, they've worked in, they've built experience in, they have relationships in. And so they can provide some guidance. So they are a bit more active. And that's why it's helpful in the early stage of the business to have the right angel investor, because the person is not really writing you a check, but you are leveraging them beyond the check they write.
Right.
And so I tell founders, it's not every angel investor that is suitable for you. The same way that we investors look for the kind of business we invest in, you, the founder, needs to pay attention and put some effort into figuring out who this investor is and building some reason why that investor is important to you.
So this is a good point for me to ask you about the entrepreneur. I really appreciate that description of the anatomy of what an angel investor looks like and how you kind of typically find them and do them the marrying. You're marrying them to a class of people who have changed and evolved over this 10 years. I mean, even over the time since you were an entrepreneur. So particularly in the tech space, because obviously tech is always moving and changing. So tell us now about the evolution of what you're seeing from the entrepreneur space in Africa.
Right. So when we started this in 2013, I remember one of my friends said, Eric, this is a utopian idea. It's not going to work. It's a Silicon Valley thing, you know. But actually, people have been investing and doing this in Africa. I mean, if we take the traditional account apprenticeship, where you work with your uncle's business, your uncle then sets you up for your business. I mean, the thing that we do, that's investing. That's angel investing, right?
Yeah.
Your uncle, you work with your uncle for years, you learn the trade, and then he or she gives you some money, gives you some work, gives you an office, and you start your trading business, and you take your next cousin, and then you do the same thing. It's investing. We've been doing it, you know. So I don't think it's an alien idea to Africa, but it's been there to a lot of family businesses, family-owned businesses. People do this in ways just that we didn't call it angel investing, right? So the first point is that it's not alien to Africa. It's been happening. What I figured out is how do we apply this to the technology industry? Obviously, the technology industry is a new industry in Africa, right? I mean, telecom to mobile in the last 20, 30 years, well, 40 years, I was saying, I started in 1986. And so applying this to an industry, bringing some of the learnings from Silicon Valley, but most importantly, adapting it to the African environment and figuring out how can we do early stage investing in Africa that really moves the needle for early stage tech founders. And so when we set out Angel Fair, this is what we said, this is the experiment we set out to do. And hopefully we will come up with a model. But the question is, what have we learned over the last 10 years? And I'll tell you three things that we've learned. The first is that the African entrepreneur has evolved from first-time founders to now second-time founders. In my first set of investment, I invested primarily in guys who are doing it for the first time. Obviously, if somebody's doing it for the first time, they make a lot of first-time mistakes, right? Today, I'm investing in second-time founders. Founders who have done it before, some of them have failed and have come back. I actually have a founder in my portfolio that is their third rodeo. They failed twice already. And I can see how those two failures have made them better. I've also invested in a founder who exited their business and they've started another business. And I can see how different and how more experienced and how better they are. And so are other investors I've seen. I've seen also in their portfolio. The second is that we've also seen a very interesting phenomenon where professionals who have worked in corporate are leaving corporate to start their own entrepreneurship ventures. This is the most striking thing that I've seen, and we've now invested in fund two. We've invested in probably three of those. And I can see how differentiated somebody who's working corporate for, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years of their life. They've got some financial security and stability in life. They've got their own family, or they've got family, but they've got professional aspirations achieved. They have some financial security, and now they want to do the next thing, which is now, I want to build what I want to do. And you can see the difference with, you know, those and the first set of entrepreneurs that we invested in, who, you know, most some of them are college dropouts, and nothing wrong with that. Some of them, right after college, you know, started a company. One of my most successful companies is two founders who started a company in college, and they never had any corporate experience. And these guys are now building about a half a billion valuation business. So it's possible that the founders who haven't got corporate experience but can build extremely successful company. And I also have founders who didn't have college degrees and they started believing in themselves and they are very successful. I also have PhD founders. I have founders, one of the founders that we invested in our second portfolio is a PhD level candidate who had worked in government and then, you know, did his first startup, which was very successful, and then started his second startup. Right, I wasn't invested in the first startup, but I invested in the second startup. The third thing is that when we started, we also saw these entrepreneurs in some key markets, and I call them king's countries. I actually wrote a book called The Kings of Africa, which was Kenya, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana, and South Africa, KINGS. So when I was starting, I wanted to look at, you know, of course, you know, my background, I've worked in 32 countries, I've visited 46 African countries, and I'm incredibly lucky and successful in that regard. But when I was going to do investing, one of the things I learned is that you need to invest, you need to start small. And I've always done this. I always had a, even when I was in trial, I always had a big vision, but I always believe you start small. So we asked myself the question, which are the five countries that are leading sort of this digital economy? And so I wrote this book, you know, during my hiatus between 2020 and 2023, I wrote this book where I kind of analyzed these five countries I call the kings, the market leaders, as the countries leading the emerging digital economy in Africa. So when I wanted to invest, I said, okay, why don't I start from these five countries? Obviously, I started from Ghana, where, you know, I come from, and my first investment was a Ghanaian startup. And then branched out into Nigeria, I did Kenya, I did South Africa, and Ivory Coast. And also, when you look at the King's countries, these five countries embody sub-Saharan Africa. So it's a predominantly West African acronym. The ING is West Africa, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana. And then you have Kenya for East Africa and South Africa for Southern Africa. So there's some bias to West Africa, where I come from. But basically, the thing was that I started in those countries, Ghana, I went to Nigeria, I went to Ivory Coast, then Kenya and South Africa. And in a way, it helped me sort of create a Pan-African thinking, which was actually the quite revolutionary in angel investing. Because the traditional norm with angel investing is that you invest local. It's a hyper-local activity. You want to invest close to founders that actually in Silicon Valley, they say you can drive through two in an hour.
Yeah.
So that when something is breaking, you can show up and help. Basically, that's the whole idea, that this thing can get broken. And so as an investor, you want to be close enough that when shit goes down, you can be there to help. Basically, that's the thing. But I kind of was contrarian in a sense. The reason I was contrarian was partly because there was not a lot of companies doing it locally. And so it was just, you know, difficult to say, I want to concentrate on Ghana because there was just not a lot of activities in Ghana, right? Mm-hmm. And there was not a lot of activities in Kenya at that time, 10 years ago. Today, there is. Today, there are funds that are countries focused. There are investors that do Ghana alone. There are investors that do Kenya alone. But back then, there was not. So this is the third thing that has happened is that this innovation had become more, has grown in quantity and grown in quality at a country level and at a Pan-African level, right? Now, the fourth is also that it has not gone beyond the king's countries. The five countries that I postulated, now we see innovation in Uganda. So in our fund two, we've invested in Uganda. We've invested in Tanzania. We've invested in a Tanzanian founder. We've invested in a Senegalese founder. We've invested in a Zambian founder recently. Right. Mm-hmm. We're looking to invest in Mozambique. I've been spending time there. And so this innovation is now spreading like wildfire across the continent, right? Which is, in my view, tells me that there's a renaissance. There's something really happening in our continent. And Florence, I can't tell you this enough. You know, my generation and your generation, we were very glad to go to leave the continent and go to school in America or in Europe, right? And some of us decided not to come back, and then some of us came. One generation from us, these guys believe that they can build businesses on this continent. it's a huge paradigm shift. For me, that is the most powerful paradigm shift. I mean, you go to a place like Cape Town and you meet a founder and he's telling you, I can build the next Facebook, I can build the next Google. I mean, that mindset, that is a kind of confidence. That kind of mindset is what you need. That's what changes a people. That's what makes change, right? So we're seeing this across Africa. I went to Guinea-Conakry. A friend of mine invited me to Guinea-Conakry. And I met entrepreneurs in Guinea-Conakry who are building edtech startups. They have incubation hubs. So this is really powerful. I think something is happening on our continent. And I'm excited that, you know, I was lucky to be a pioneer. 10 years down the line today, there is a lot of angel networks. You know, when we started Angel Fair, the other thing we did was we used that fair to build local angel networks. So every country that we go, like when we went to Lagos, there was the Lagos Angel Network was just an idea. And we helped them set it up with the event, with them as our local partners for the event. And then they adopted the format of our event and turned it into Deals Day. So every month, every 3 months, they select 5 entrepreneurs who come to pitch to the investors and invest in them. So this has become a format. So today there's Lagos Angel Network. There's Accra Angels Network. There is Cape Town Angels. There's angel networks all over the continent, right? Actually, this week, all of them are coming here to Cape Town. There's a big angel investing event. All the angel networks and investors are pouring into Cape Town this week. And then followed the following week is Super Return, which is a big private equity and venture capital event. So the next 2 weeks, all these investors across the country are coming. Right. So 10 years down the line, we've built a pretty robust investing stack from angel investing all the way to private equity on a continent. To be fair, private equity had started much more before. You know, the private equity investors have been on the continent 20, 30, 40 years, right? Investing in very big deals, you know,
right. Road, infrastructure, right.
Right. But now we've built this sort of earlier stage, investing smaller companies, and now there's a huge venture capital, you know, community that is, you know, also building up now, and we connect to the private equity. So if you look at it, the way it works is the angel investors are down here. Mm-hmm. They take the first breaks. Okay. Then the company then now wants to get into getting more customers, building more users. They go to venture capitalists for money, VCs. We call them VCs. Mm-hmm. Then when they want to grow exponentially, they go to the private equity guy. And then the private equity guy then takes them to the capital markets, right? So that's how the stack works. So we are almost there with building the stack across Africa. And so once that stack is built, then the founder goes through the motion of starting early stage, getting people who can take the early stage risks, followed by the venture capitalists who take later stage risks, the private equity guys, then the capital markets.
Nice. So then thinking about the entrepreneur again and how you're finding them actually. So you work with a lot of incubators and things like that, I'm assuming as well. So how are you rating them? Exactly. How do you rank and how are you rating them? And is there a criteria like this incubation space, but this one go to, how does that work?
Absolutely. You know, the incubators are also a phenomenon that has happened over the last decade. You know, when we started, there was almost 3 or 5 of them, 10 years. Today, there are about 600 plus of them, right?
Okay.
So, obviously, with so many of them, there is always, you know, the grain from the chaff, right? But it's a lot of grain out there and you can find. Like everything else, there is some element of sort of stuff that is not too useful and the startup that is very useful. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is that over the years, we've built relation with these incubator accelerators over the years. And each of them have some form of incubation and acceleration program every year. Mm-hmm. So we actually tell them to give us the best entrepreneurs who have gone through their process.
Got it.
And that's why we do our events in November, because by November, they have spent a whole year preparing the entrepreneurs, taking them through their programs, etc., right? Mm-hmm. So by the time they get to us in November, they've gone through some, at least a process over the year with their local incubator or accelerator or innovation space where they are, from the country to India.
Yeah.
So by the time they get to us, it's almost like they've gone through the first round of refinement.
Right.
Then we take them to our own process and get them investor ready. So actually, tomorrow and Tuesday, we have the Entrepreneurs Bootcamp, which is the bootcamp that is just for the entrepreneurs who are arriving yesterday and today into Cape Town. So tomorrow, we take you through this Investor Readiness Bootcamp. Prior to this, they've gone through an online process. It's a whole online process that they go through, documentation, preparation, etc. So the next 2 days is when we sort of hone them up and sort of cross the T's, dot the I's before the event, they meet the investors on 29th and 30th and the 1st of December. So working with these incubators and accelerators is super important. They are the innovation hotspots. They are the nexus. But you are right that not all of them are at par, right? But they start from somewhere and they grow up there. For example, when Innovation Hub started in Kenya, you know, people said, ah, man, it's just a bunch of kids sitting down here. They don't know what they're doing. But today, the companies have come out of Innovation Hub that are world-class. When CC Hub started in Nigeria, people said, ah, these kids are just wasting people's money. They're sitting here behind computers. What do you mean by they're working sitting behind computer screens? But today, they are billion-dollar companies out of Nigeria. The companies out of Nigeria that are billion-dollar companies. Right?
Yeah.
So you need this sort of playful environment for entrepreneurs to unleash their creativity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you see a bunch of kids sitting down playing with computers and doing some stuff. They are, a lot of them maybe, you know, there's always excesses around this stuff. But some of them are really serious and they want to build the business and they are working these spaces and that's where it all starts from. So you need to be there. So we spend a lot of time. How do you find it? We spend a lot of time in these spaces. We have an office in Nairobi, Joburg and Accra. Me and my partners, we spend a fair amount of time in these innovation hubs because that's where you get the gems. That is where you get a gem from the rubble. So in there are a lot of mud and rubble and everything in there. But if you spend time there, you begin to see the gems. And this is what a mark of an investor is, right? An investor is somebody who's able to see a guy who tells you an idea and he doesn't even look like it. But you can spot, I think this guy can do it, you know? And then you build conviction and then you take a leap of faith.
So speaking of, let's talk about the fair. You talked about the next 2 days is the beginning of it. So take us through how you conceived of the program for the fair and what you're in for the next few days.
Right. So we created a unique format 10 years ago. That format is premised on three things. Two are superior, one is supplementary. That premise is that investors operate in their own networks.
Mm-hmm.
Entrepreneurs operate in their own networks.
Mm-hmm.
And those networks don't collide. Interesting.
Right.
They almost run parallel, right? Investors hang out with investors. If you're an ex-founder, you have your mates, your buddies, your age mates, you meet at the same social club, you play golf together, you eat the same restaurant, The entrepreneurs also meet at their own hangouts. You know, they do something else. Maybe they play soccer. They don't play golf, right? Or they play pool. They don't play chess.
Squash, right?
Yeah. So it's almost like, correct. It's almost like two different social classes that run in parallel, right? So the thinking was, how do we bring these two together? So that's all the event was trying to do, right? Now, for these two to come together, you need the supporting ecosystem of people that enable those two classes of communities. So that's what I said. Third, I'm not saying it's inferior. It's the support system. You need them because without them, it's hard to bring the two together. So our events normally have these three people. We curate investors through the investor networks and the investor support organizations. And then we curate the entrepreneurs through the incubators, innovation hubs, and the co-working space. And then we invite those people to come to the event as well. And so when they get into it, what happens is that it helps build trust. Because somebody who is meeting an entrepreneur for the first time, it's in the room with somebody who works with entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And then somebody who is an investor for the first time is in the room with somebody who builds investors. So almost like in the conversation, there's sort of validation going on, right? So you're talking to an entrepreneur and he say, look, I can do this, you know, I'm from Ghana. Because, you know, you're all from different countries, right? You've met in Cape Town. So sometimes it's like, this guy is telling me stuff that I don't think he can do that stuff. But immediately you can verify from somebody who is from Uganda, who works in the... This guy was telling me that he actually built a 3D printing machine from recycled stuff. So I know of it. I know the incubation hub, he really from there, right? So there's some way of validating, right? So that's what we bring. So we say we bring the ecosystem together. And so when you bring them together, in that room there, in that 1 or 2 days that you're together, what happens is that we get the, and then now the format of the event. So then the main format of the event is that the entrepreneurs go up to pitch. So there's a pitch section that is the main section, the main thing. Morning pitch and afternoon pitch. Now we intersperse that with panels. We have what we call investors panel and entrepreneurs panel, which are panelists that have already done it. So investors who have invested sharing their experiences. We call it experience sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the entrepreneurs panel, entrepreneurs who have raised money and built businesses, also sharing their experience. Excuse me. And so, you know, between those two are the pitches. And then we normally have a keynote to start the day. A keynote is a very successful investor, a very successful entrepreneur who is interviewed in a conversation format. so that they can be able to cross-pollinate with each other. And essentially, the successfully entrepreneurial investor is sharing the experience of how they did it, you know, and how they invest in company. All that experience sharing creates inspiration and momentum for the entrepreneurs who want to be like, you can do it. He's done it. You know, he's been successful. He's made money. He's telling you how he's doing it. You know, so you can also do it, right? And so that is generally the format. Then the last part is the networking part. So we normally have a big long lunch break, and we have tea and coffee breaks. These breaks are important. So every session, after every two sessions, after every session, every panel, there's a pitch, then we go for a break. Then we come back, then we do lunch, then we go for a break. Then there's a pitch, then we go for a break. Those breaks are the times when the interactions happen. So when the guy is finished pitching and then there's a break, and investors say, oh, man, this guy was very interesting. So I drink coffee to go talk. You know, pick an interest. I think what he said was really interesting. And then the evenings, we try to create some that we create a sort of dinner and eating sessions, or we leave them. The reason is that most of the time when an investor is turning on for us, hey, well, you know, what are you doing tonight? Oh, yeah, you know, I'm free. Okay, let's have dinner together, right? Times where there are two or three of them, they go to a restaurant and then they start digging deeper, right? They start. So tell me your story. How did you really build the street? I mean, you're from Uganda, you know, how do you... So then it gets a bit more interesting. So over a meal, over drinks, they start talking some more. They start digging some more, right? And then, you know, eventually deals happen. But before the event, what we also do is that when we curate and we list the founders and entrepreneurs, we actually share their profiles before. So sometimes the investors, we also get a sense of what investors want to invest in. So sometimes investors come to the event with a sense of, oh, I mean, this guy's profile looks very interesting. This is the kind of business I want to invest in. And so sometimes there's some preconceptions around what you want to do. And so when they come, it's easy to then interact and engage with them. So we do some matchmaking, you know, by sharing profiles and, you know, people's contact and that type of stuff. Of course, with the consent of each party, right? And this is the most difficult part of this exercise because people don't know each other, right? And people are coming from different backgrounds, different social classes. You have to respect all of that, you know. You have to respect people's privacy, people's rights information. You may introduce a founder, it may not work, you know. So there's a high risk, level of risk that happens with this exercise, you know. So we spend a lot of time with our team working on this. Why do we do this as Tanzo Capital, as a firm? Because it's the way we get deals. Actually, our first fund, a lot of the founders that we invested in were people that we met through this process. And it's become a process for us to trust in making deals. So we don't get a fee from doing this. We actually invest in doing it. We put money into creating the event. My team is here downstairs. My team has been here for a week, 2 weeks now. I've been here for a month. And we'll be meticulously working because it's a way for us also as a firm to see the best entrepreneurs from around the continent in one event. And so it helps us find the best ones that we also invest in. And that's why we do. So we're almost on the same page with the investors that come. We are all looking for the best founders. And so eventually, we get the best founders, we are investing them. Some of the first deals that we did were actually through the event where we would say we want to invest in this founder. For example, Teranga Solutions, I didn't invest alone. Other people who came to the event then say, hey, Eric, I also want to invest. So we did all the due diligence, all the paperwork, and they wrote a check. We created an SPV, a special purpose vehicle, and then we invested. And then we considered that you're an investor and we put it into fund one. So these models of creating SPVs and funds, you know, to invest have also worked, you know. And all this happens because there's trust that is built, there's interest that is built, there's conviction, and people want to work together when they come to the event.
Sure. So I like that you kind of went in that direction of doing the deal. So a deal gets done how if they're at the event?
So the best case scenario is an investor has seen the profile of a founder. Obviously, then they'll do some online research, and then some of them will even kind of get on a phone call. Someone that comes to and say, I want to talk to this guy before he comes to Cape Town. You know, so we set them up and then they start interacting. So when they meet, there's some chemistry already. Worst case scenario, they haven't met each other, they don't know each other. The guy goes up on the podium, says, I'm building the next spaceship. And this is the way I'm going to do it. And he says some stuff, shows. We try not to use PowerPoints, by the way. We actually keep PowerPoints out of the meeting. We say, you know, tell your story. Don't pitch. Tell your story. Why are you doing this when there's many things you could do? So a founder goes up, tells a story. An investor then says, man, this is very interesting. This is the kind of entrepreneur I want to buy. So immediately, they spoke an interest. They get on a tea, coffee break conversation, or lunch break conversation. They start building some conviction about the founder. Founder goes, yeah, I'm doing this because I had this problem, and I thought of solving it for myself. And then I realized that other people had that problem. And so I built a prototype. And then I sent it to someone. They liked it. And they started playing with it. And then they said they paid me for it. And then that's how I thought I had a product and I built some more and that kind of stuff, right? So that happens as a best case or a worst case in the event. Now, when an investor said they are interested, now there's a whole process that follows on from that. Now you have to do due diligence. Okay, is this guy really for real? Is he able to build this business? Is he able to do this stuff? And this goes from doing due diligence on the founder. Is what he's saying to me true? You know, the references he's making, are they real? This prototype he's saying, did he actually build it? You know, so that process takes time. Sometimes it happens during the event. It happens before. Mostly happens after the event, right? And then sometimes investors also announce, you know, I want to invest in this guy. And then the process happens afterwards.
Okay.
So afterwards, there's another sort of a month in some cases. Some have happened a week, in 2 weeks. But on average, a month to 6 months in some cases before the deals happen, where there's due diligence, the discussion and negotiation of terms, there is amounts, you know, what are you going to use the money for? Okay, I'm going to build an app. I have to develop a team. I have to hire these people. I have to get an office. I have to buy computers. I have to buy the server space. You know, I have to do this stuff. So that discussion goes on. And that interaction goes back and forth. And then the investor says, okay, I get it. Okay, this amount is what's going to be used for. You have an accounting system? Yes. You know, I don't have an accounting system, but I use a third party. You know, can you get a software? You know, all that stuff, right? So there's some process that goes on. And then eventually, I, you know, terms are set. You know, paper is signed. People sign. Money is wired. Entrepreneur gets on the road and then, you know, builds what they're trying to build. And which is the first stage, you know. Many instances, that first check is the entrepreneur's first, you know, capital that goes into building the business. So most of the time it's towards the product development or building a minimum viable product, right? So maybe he needs to hire one engineer or two more engineers. He needs to buy a piece of software, a piece of equipment. He needs to buy, you know, some manufacturing device or something like that. So that's what that money goes into. And then sometimes, okay, pay themselves some salary or pay themselves some stipend. You know, they got to keep spirit and soul together to keep doing this stuff. So that first money kind of goes into that kind of stuff. And then once they finally have that, they then essentially create the process of, in the tech, in the software, what we call a minimum viable product, MVP, right? Mm-hmm. Which is now, you give me an idea that you're going to create this bottle, right? So I gave you some money. Now you come up and then you create something that looks like it, right? And then once you have a minimum viable product, then you need to test for what you call product market fit. Will this product fit the market you're talking about? So now, put it out there. Let's see whether Florence will buy this bottle and drink the water and say it's the kind of water Eric said he will produce, right? So once Florence drinks the water, oh, this water tastes like, you know, pineapple-infused water, like Eric said. It's nice. I like it. Oh, okay. How much is it? Oh, it's $20. Yeah, I think I can pay $20 for this. Here you go. Then you've got a product market fit, right? So then now you've built a product. A customer has tasted that product, validated that it's worth $20 or 20 rand or 20 CDs, and they've given you 20 CDs for it. So you now have product market fit. Then you go to another customer. Okay, you get 5 or 10, also saying that. Somebody will say, oh, okay, I like the bottle, but it's too tiny. Maybe make it a little bigger or make the head a little smaller. You take that feedback, then you adjust it. Then it says, okay, oh, yeah, I think now it works for me. Right? Then you got product market fit. Now, once you've gotten that, then now the next thing is that you need to develop a market entry strategy. So now how do I get it to a lot of people in the market? Now, that is sort of a different strategy from the initial people who tried and kind of use it and give you some validation and test it. Some products, you know, in the software, well, you put it on sort of Google Store, on App Store, and then people start downloading it. So people start downloading it. Ah, okay. There's product market fit. People want to use it. You're downloading it. You're using it, right? They're paying for it, right? Or if it's a bottle product, you got to put it in a supermarket and see if people pick it up. And people start picking it up and they pay for it, then, you know, you got the market validation and the people are paying for it. It's going out there, right? And also an important point I want to make is that I kept referring to this bottle. So our event is biased towards technology, but we do accept non-technology businesses. We've had manufacturing businesses. We have, fruit businesses, apparel businesses. So we're only biased towards technology, but generally we accept all kinds of entrepreneurs. Actually, this event, there are two founders. One of them is doing a type of bottled water. One of them is going to have. And then the other one is not the same bottled water, but there's a different type of bottled water. And then there's another one who's doing a type of drink, cocktails. He's making cocktails into a bottle. So
okay.
Your favorite cocktail packaged. Already comes, so you like one already packaged.
Right.
And they are going to be pitching as well.
That's a big market, by the way. That's a huge market in the U.S., so it will definitely sell on the continent.
So we do make room for non-tech businesses, but we're too biased towards tech and software businesses.
So I love that you took us through that. So it basically kind of gives a great understanding of how far the angel investment goes, right? So all of that is applied to what is going on in the angel investment. So I know that you got to run, you got to get back into the work of putting on this fair. So before we sign off for today and continue in part two, tell us about what you're looking forward to in the next week. What are the highlights? What are you looking forward to?
Well, we're really looking forward to making deals happen. The fundamental is that our event is premised on deals happening, right? Even if we had 10 people in the room and one deal happens, that's the most important for us, right? And so we take a lot of effort in making sure that we take all the boxes for deals to happen. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to, I'm getting a lot of people flying. I'm just getting messages. People are getting in.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
people are going to be settling down. Tomorrow the boot camp is going to start. And we're looking for the founders coming in, you know, telling us some of the founders we haven't met before.
Okay.
We're going to meet them for the first time, nice. Right? Great that we meet them. Tomorrow we have we're having a big conference to officially announce the event. So, you know, I'm going to send you the press conference material to share with your community. But we're going to be out on radio also getting, you know, the local community. And then, you know, the investment event is the 29th and 30th and 1st December. So we're doing it at the Fountain Hotel. And we have a lot of people staying there and around. It's downtown in Cape Town. Well, we need the event. Tomorrow's workshops are at the Womb Hub. One of the things that I forgot to mention is that over the years, we've also really enabled female founders and female investors. So this year, we started staging this all-female investors panel in 2016, and this year we're staging it. So today we have female, very successful, well-accomplished female investors and female founders. We currently have a 50-50 or 60-40 sort of split in terms of the gender parity in our events.
Sure.
And we made a lot of effort to make this happen.
Nice.
Because we don't want to leave anyone behind and we want to go together. As you say in the African proverb, if you want to go fast, you go alone. But if you want to go far, you go with everyone. And so this week, we're looking forward to going with everyone and having a community down here and making an impact into the future, the next 10 years, right? The first 10 years. And the next 10 years, if I may end, what we are focusing on is the last 10 years, we've enabled mostly local and African investors and entrepreneurs. The next 10 years, we want to focus on the diaspora. How do we bring...
Yes.
How do we bring, you call it global Africa, into
yes.
Africa.
Nice.
Right? So we want to now be bringing entrepreneurs and investors from the US, from Barbados, from the Caribbean, from Europe, from Iceland.
I love it.
From Asia, from everywhere. So we really are going to make an effort into bringing the African diaspora into these events, making conscious effort to enable African professionals in the US. You don't need to relocate to Africa to invest,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
We create a platform where you can do this virtually, but you can start actively investing. And to the point, the investor, an angel investor, is somebody who has $1 million stash in the bank. No, you don't need $1 million stash in the bank before you start. You can start with the little you have, but it just has to be money you can lose because you may invest in a company and it will not work. That is the premise, right? So if it's $500 that you can put away every month to invest in a founder, start from there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of entrepreneurs that $500 is what they need to start. And then the next day, they get $5,000, and then they get $10,000, then $50,000, then they go up, right? So whatever money you have, so long as that's money that you can lose because it may not work, you know, there's a 90% chance, very important, that it may not work. So it should be money that you can put to it. But if it works, you put $500 to a company, right? And then 10 years down the line, that company worth $1 billion, you know.
You're a millionaire.
The upside is worth it. You know,
yeah.
I know people that invested in Uber when it was $1 million and 10 million in valuation. And they put $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Today, look at the valuation of the business.
Right.
Right. So, yes, it's a very risky business. It's a very risky undertaking, but the upside is very high. And so you need to come in with that, you know, mindset that I could lose the money. But generally, when you invest in 10 companies, they say 9 fail and 1 make up for the sins of the 9. So you invest and then 10 will fail, then 1 will be such a success that if you took 100,000 of your money and then you put 10,000 to 10 companies, right? 9 of them fail, 90,000. That 10,000, last 10,000 becomes successful and becomes $1 million. Now, so if you get $1 million, that's a 10x on your 100,000 that you put to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically the general formula of how you need to think about the mat of doing this investing.
Yeah, nice, nice. Thank you so much, Eric. We look forward to part two, the learning more about you and your strategy and Chanzo Capital. And I wish you all the best for this event coming up this week. And so, Global Citizens, thank you for joining us. You can catch us Tuesdays at globalcitizenspod.com or wherever you get your podcasts. So thanks again for joining us. And until next time, bye for now.